It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
The goal ain't having that. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the Jackson. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday, it's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast began in November of 2013. That was nearly 2 years. That was over 2 years before the birth of my first child. 9 years later, we've come full circle. For the first time in the history of Hip Hop Sports Report, your man Jay Hicks has a very, very, very special guest. He is the apple that does not fall so far from the tree. He is my pride and joy. He is the greatest thing I've ever done, along with his siblings. He is my firstborn son, and he is my co-host, Riding Shoddy, for this evening. Give it up, y'all, for the very first time in HHSR podcast history. The 9-year-old legend himself, King Kyan Christopher Bradley Hicks. Kyan, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, you know.
I'm doing good, you know? Yeah, I know. You excited to be on the podcast tonight?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, how did this come about? You may be wondering. Well, you know, I was watching, Kyan has really gotten into football over the last year and a half, and he actually is a demon on the flag football field. So everybody should be aware of that because he's a monster out there. I believe in his last 2 months, it was a 2-month season that he had on the Commanders, is the team he played for. And in 7 games, he scored 10 touchdowns. Most of those touchdowns came when his team was trailing in the fourth quarter and he decided to take over the game. So, do you have anything to say about your flag football exploits before we dive in tonight? How did you get so good at flag football?
I practice, but not a whole lot.
So, you're just gifted? Is that what you're telling me?
I guess.
My son's gifted, y'all. No, you actually do practice quite a bit. Like, you went to 2 flag football camps last summer. You play with your friends at recess every day. And then after school, you play. And then you had 2 flag football sessions in the fall and winter. So I think you've gotten a lot of football in. And you had a basketball game this evening, and his team won, and you scored a couple of baskets, too. So that was awesome, right?
Yeah.
So Kyan's going to be joining us this evening. We were sitting talking football the other day, and he made some really good points. Actually, you were talking about MVP. And you were specifically talking about like a Super Bowl MVP or something like that. And you were saying, well, why does the quarterback always get MVP? And I explained why the quarterback typically gets MVP. And then you said, well, if like, say, for example, the Vikings went to the Super Bowl, then Justin Jefferson should get MVP because he's a better receiver than Sam Darnold as a quarterback. So why would Justin Jefferson not get MVP? And I said, you're making some pretty good points there, Kai. So I can't refute any of that. So I said, do you want to be on the podcast? And you said... All right, so Kyan's going to join us. I'm going to get my usual takes off about the AFC and NFC Championship game. We got a block on that. And, of course, we're going to preview Super Bowl 59 from New Orleans. Shout out my man Terry Palmer out there in New Orleans. I spent a couple of weeks down in New Orleans this past year. So, yeah, what up, New Orleans? I was down there in 2024 on a couple of occasions, and I know they had some weird snow down there recently. They had the tragedy a few weeks back before.
Gators.
That. Well, yeah, they have gators down in New Orleans. Yes, you're just gonna throw that in there. Okay. So, but yeah, the Super Bowl is coming to town. So the Eagles and Chiefs will obviously touch on that. We're gonna talk about our Cleveland Browns. And we're going to cap off the evening talking a little bit of NFL draft, kind of foreshadowing for the mock draft, which is coming soon. So, hiphopsportsreport.com is the website. You guys know that by now. Please go check us out. Find our podcast wherever podcasts are available, I think. and make sure that you, yeah, thank you. You deserve to hit me for that one. Find us on Twitter or X or whatever it's called it, and Facebook. We have sites there, so yeah. Please check us out. Engage. Let us know what you thought about tonight's show.
And on Instagram.
We're not on Instagram, but thank
I
you.
Am.
I guess you do have an Instagram. Do you even know your Instagram handle that your mom runs? You don't even know what it is. Tonight is February 1st, 2025.
What?
It's our first podcast of 2025, and it's already going a little bit off the rails. But I want to get us started by talking about the NFC Championship game. What is it?
I don't know what this guy's been doing lately, but what the heck is 2025? What is that?
Okay.
I don't think that's a thing.
Okay, you just stunting on me on my own show?
Lol.
Okay. Let's relax. Okay. NFC... NFC Championship game. Okay. I think I'm in the thick of it right now. Let's go. NFC Championship game.
Joe Brady.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Joe Brady in a little bit. Stay off my notes, though, okay? Yeah, this is going to be an interesting one, y'all. Buckle in. The NFC Championship game. So, the Commanders fell to the Eagles. The magic carpet ride came to an end. Yeah, it was 55 points put up by the Eagles, which was a conference championship game record. To me, it felt awfully... a lot like Ohio State versus Notre Dame, like where one team just didn't really belong on the field with the other team. It was nice that the other team got there, but they really didn't belong on the same field. And so it was not shocking, in my opinion, the outcome, as you may have seen on the website. I had the Eagles winning and covering, and the Commanders had a fantastic season, no doubt about that. Jaden Daniels, runaway offensive rookie of the year. They seem to be set up for success going into the future, but they were a few playmakers short this time around. But they made it further than anybody anticipated as a sixth seed. 55-23 was the final score. Philly had 7 rushing touchdowns in the game. That is a lot of rushing touchdowns. That makes it sound like they just decided not to tackle that day. The turnovers were the big story, obviously. Washington turned the ball over, I believe, 3 times on fumbles. And all of them were recovered by Philadelphia. What was interesting, though, was that the fumbles didn't feel like an accident. They did not feel like an accident. You know, fumbles can be very fluky. There's a lot of luck involved with when they happen, the way the ball bounces, and who recovers it. There's not as much skill in it as you might think, although there can be some skill involved in punching the ball out. It felt like Philly had a concerted effort to try to punch the ball out on defense, and they succeeded. And again, they were tied for the league lead in fumbles forced this season. The Eagles were. So not an accident that they were able to have that success. I believe the Steelers were tied with the Eagles for the most forced fumbles. Basically, don't take the ball into Pennsylvania because you was probably going to cough it up. Washington, again, may be back. I think they still need a few pieces to go along with my man Terry McLaurin. Shout out to the Ohio State Buckeyes, national champions. I think McLaurin needs some help there. They need a little bit more pop from the skill positions to help out Jaden Daniels. The run game is pretty solid, but maybe could use some younger legs even in the backfield potentially. But again, Washington, great year. I think they made it as far as they could have hoped to get, and I think they got outclassed by simply a better football team. Kyan, you wanted to touch on Saquon Barkley's performance in the NFC Championship game. What did you have to say about the man who left New York and joined the rival Philadelphia Eagles and casually threw up 118 yards on 15 carries and 3 touchdowns? What was your take on Saquon's performance last week?
He did really, like, super good. He had a great season. He also,
Well, he had that run that started the game, right? The first,
yeah.
It was the first run of the game, and the first snap of the game on offense for Philadelphia. They hand it, they pitch it to Saquon, and he runs for the one of the most unbelievable touchdowns you'll see. It was 60 yards. It was par for the course by Saquon standards, but I've never seen a dude break a dude's tackle and then that dude spin around and then get his tackle broken again. He got his tackle broken two times.
And
on the same.
He maintains his balance somehow.
Yeah, like, but if you remember the play, like the guy, Saquon broke the guy's tackle and then he spun off of him and then the guy went around Saquon and then he tried to tackle him a second time all at the same time and fell. Like, he tried to tackle him twice at the same time and he failed both times. Like, that was amazing. I've never seen that before.
Amazing for Saquon, not amazing for the guy that tried to tackle him.
Exactly. That was not an amazing tackle. Although still better than the worst tackle I've ever seen in the Music City. What'd they call it? The Minnesota Miracle or whatever in when the Saints lost to the Vikings and Case Keenum hit Stephon Diggs and your boy, the safety for the Saints, I think his name was Marcus Williams. He went for the no eyes, no arm tackle. It was the worst tackle I've ever seen.
I think you showed me that before.
Yeah, it was the worst tackle I've ever seen. He didn't look and he used no arms and you know what happened after that.
Yeah, but the ball has some pretty good tackles too.
Who?
The ball.
What do you mean? Are you talking about that Kenny Pickett play?
Yeah.
Kenny Pickett somersaulted over himself?
Yeah.
And threw the ball in the dirt.
Ball tackled him.
Yeah, the ball tackled him. He got sacked by the football.
Yeah.
So yeah, NFC Championship. I expected Philly to get in there and handle business, and that's what they did. And so they are back for the second time in 3 years and for the third time in 7 years in the Super Bowl. Interestingly, the Eagles prevented the Patriots from potentially winning three Super Bowls in a row between 2015 and 2017. The Pats beat the Seahawks. The Pats lost to the Eagles. And then they beat the Falcons in that great comeback. Now, if they beat the Eagles in the second game, there's no way to know that they would have gone back for the third Super Bowl against Atlanta. But that, you know, as we look back on historically, the Eagles interrupted a Patriots three-peat. This year, the Eagles have a chance to interrupt the Kansas City Chiefs three-peat. The Chiefs took care of business in the AFC Championship game. There was a lot of commentary coming out of that game. Too much, yeah. Kyan, you wanted to talk a little bit about, what did you want to talk about with respect to the AFC title game? I think you had some comments on Josh Allen, right?
Yeah, and
James Cook, right?
Yeah.
Well, what about Josh Allen and James Cook? What did you think of their performance?
So at the beginning of the game, I'd probably say Josh Allen. Not towards the end, he kind of fell down, but in the beginning, there was a lot of fourth downs.
They were making some fourth down conversions?
Yeah. And Josh Allen and his team got some of the fourth downs in beginning of the game.
Yeah. Well, I think the Chiefs' defense showed why they are of championship caliber. They have been for the last several years, obviously. And frankly, they're carrying Mahomes. I'm not going to lie. I mean, again, Patrick Mahomes, he came out of that game in the AFC title game. He threw for, what was it?
8 yards?
No, it was more than 8 yards. He threw for 245 yards and one touchdown. And then he came out of the game and people are calling him the GOAT. I'm like, why? Since when does that qualify you for GOAT status? And I know it's more than just that, but it was annoying to me how they talk about him, as it always is annoying to me how they talk about Mahomes. But the defense is clearly carrying this team. This is a defense-first team in Kansas City. In Mahomes' prime, not at the beginning of his career, note that. In his prime, it's a defensive-led team. The Chiefs managed to get some fourth down stops. As you mentioned, the Bills got a few, but then the Chiefs' defense stiffened as the game went on. And what I didn't like, Cotton...
Chris Jones.
Yeah, Chris Jones is good. What I didn't like was the lack of imagination from Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator of Buffalo. There were one too many times where they went for that tush-push play and
didn't get it.
And did not get it. There was one too many times where they Allen pulls the ball and then goes left over the left guard, and Tony Romo called that out on the broadcast, and obviously the Chiefs were prepared for it. They overloaded the left side of the line, and they were able to get stops and get a good push. It just didn't feel like the Bills had all their stuff together. Even on the Bills' final drive, they had to go down and get a field goal at least. It had 3 minutes. Buffalo had all their timeouts. Josh Allen had it right in the palm of his hand to lead a drive and score with less than a minute left and basically put Mahomes and the Chiefs out of their misery. And he couldn't do it. What I didn't like, though, was even if you look at when they got to midfield, they got stopped on first and second down. So it was third and 10, Kyan. And on third down, there was a screen pass to Amari Cooper for 5 yards. You asked me earlier, what did Amari Cooper do in that game after the Browns traded him to Buffalo and he was kind of their big midseason acquisition? The answer is not much. Amari, for the game, definitely took a backseat to Mac Hollins, who had 3 catches for 73 yards and a score. But Amari Cooper had 4 catches for 33 yards. Not all that spectacular. But they threw it to Amari on 3rd and 10. They threw him a screen pass, and he picked up 5 yards. That made it 4th and 5. I didn't love that play call by Joe Brady. And then on 4th down, there was just no account for the blitz whatsoever. And if you've ever watched the Chiefs, much like the Texans the week before, seemed flabbergasted by the Chiefs' blitz scheme and Steve Spagnuolo, one of the best coordinators, if not the best defensive coordinator in football, and a Hall of Fame-level defensive coordinator in his own right.
Amari Cooper got, like, no touchdowns at all. He only got 33 yards and 4 receptions.
I know. I mentioned
like,
that.
Like, what?
But on 4th down, Kai, you saw Spags send the corner blitz. Allen completely missed it.
Who's back?
He had a... He's the defensive coordinator for Kansas City, Steve Spagnuolo. He had aligned the protection to come from the opposite side. All of a sudden, there's a free runner coming right in at Josh Allen, and he was unblocked, and Allen had no response for it. Dalton, was it Kincaid that dropped that pass, or was it the other tight end, Knox? I think it was Kincaid. Still should have caught that ball, I should point out. It hit his hands. It was a catchable ball. It wasn't easy, but it was very catchable. Probably should have pulled that in. Nonetheless, it was 4th down, and the game was effectively over at that point. I just didn't love what Joe Brady brought to this game. And I'm going to touch on this when we preview the Super Bowl, Kai, but I just did not love what Joe Brady brought into the game. What, the 3 fumbles?
Yeah, Josh Allen.
So we have the box score pulled up here, y'all. And he noticed that Josh Allen had 3 fumbles. And I'm glad you pointed this out because Kansas City deserves a lot of credit. Because even I, at the beginning of this season, Kai, I wrote an article on the website, hiphopsportssupport.com, that said, can Kansas City steal, air quotes, steal another trophy? And they are in the midst of doing just that because they had all these close wins this year. They've now had an NFL record 17 consecutive wins in one-score games. That is
crazy. Just crazy.
Remarkable. And nobody could have seen that coming. So, you know, and some of it was good fortune. Some of it was whatever. But, you know, people want to blame the officials. I get it. But I will say, if you look at one thing that happened last year was they beat Baltimore, and I believe there was 5 fumbles in that game, and Kansas City recovered all of them. And I said, that is not something that would normally happen in a football game. And Kansas City was very fortunate to be on the receiving end of all of those fumbles, be it by their own team or by Baltimore, including the one where Zay Flowers fumbled at the 1-yard line. But as it turned out, in this game, the Bills recovered 5 fumbles.
That's, one that's by Mahomes. Crazy.
Yeah, 1 by Mahomes and 4 by Buffalo. And in spite of all of that, they still managed to win the game, the Chiefs did. So you have to give Kansas City a ton of credit for overcoming that kind of fumble luck. I mean, the ball hits the ground 5 times and you don't come up with it once. I don't know how you lose that game if you're Buffalo. Do you think the Bills are ever going to get past the Chiefs?
No.
That's why I entitled the article last week, Now or Never. You know, Now or Never. It's looking like never for Josh Allen and the Bills, at least as long as Mahomes and Andy Reid are there.
Well, maybe in 2042, maybe they might beat them.
2042? Yeah, I don't know about that. A couple other notes that I wanted to touch on with Kansas City. I really feel like every team should be copying their offense. Like, I understand the West Coast offense or whatever this variation or iteration of the West Coast offense that this is that Andy Reid's been running forever. I mean, it's crazy to me that more teams don't run this offense. I'm not, and I've said this so many times on this podcast, and I've said it so many times on the website, I'm not saying that Patrick Mahomes isn't great. Patrick is one of the all-time greats. But what does not impress me all that much is when, even in all these late fourth quarter comebacks and all this stuff, he's basically throwing the ball from 0 to 8 yards down the field. Rarely does he throw the ball 10 yards or more. He's basically throwing the ball 0 to 8 yards to wide open receivers, and they're catching it, and they're running upfield like they're Kyan Hicks. And I'm just not super impressed by Mahomes for doing that, like, because they want to give Mahomes all this credit for being this fourth quarter, late game magician, and I understand it. And I'm not saying that he's never thrown the ball deep in a comeback. I know he's done that before.
Kermit voice.
You called him Kermit voice. I get that, but I just don't think that what he's doing.
Well, that's what the Raiders think. I don't think he sounds like Kermit.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think what Mahomes is doing is unlike anything we've ever seen before. Statistically, if you look at some of his record in the playoffs and the performance and stuff like that, from that standpoint, you could make the case that it is historic and we've never seen it before. But when you watch the games, I have eyes. I watch the games, okay? And the guy that he's most often compared to is Tom Brady. And when I look at what Tom Brady did, say, against the Eagles, when they lost the Super Bowl and Tom Brady threw for 505 yards. Did you know that? Did you know he threw for 505 yards in the Super Bowl?
No, and I feel like Lamar Jackson is probably better than Mahomes. I'd say.
Why do you think that?
I mean, Lamar, they both had a... Mahomes has had a pretty good season. I feel like Lamar Jackson had a better one because... He had a lot more effort that he put into it as a quarterback than Mahomes, who just threw like at least 8 yards to his receivers, and then he just ran upfield for like 35 more yards. But Lamar Jackson actually throws it a little deeper than Mahomes would this year.
Well, that's a good analysis there, Kai. The crazy part is that for years they killed Tom Brady for not throwing the ball deep. In spite of all the stuff he did with Randy Moss, they claimed that he never threw the ball downfield and that he just threw it short to Welker and Edelman and these guys. And he got chastised for that, and people knocked him for it for years. Mahomes does it, and he's the greatest thing we've ever seen. And Mahomes is literally not throwing the ball downfield. Andy Reid is scheming these guys open. Go back and look at the Super Bowl against Philadelphia 2 years ago. Look at the game-winning touchdown Kadarius Toney set him up on the punt return, but it was, I think it was it Smith-Schuster, I think, that scored one, and then Sky Moore scored the other late in that game. Whoever scored those late touchdowns in that game, it's not as though, no, it was Kadarius Toney. Kadarius Toney had the punt return, and he scored the touchdown, and then Sky Moore scored a touchdown. That was from 5 yards and 4 yards out, respectively, both inside the last 12 and a half minutes of the game. But both of those, it was the same play. They just flipped it on one side versus the other side. It was a corn dog or hot dog, whatever it was. And both times, the receiver was wide open. And Mahomes is throwing, like, at the line of scrimmage to a dude that's wide open, and he walks into the end zone. This is the same kind of stuff we see from Mahomes more often than not. It's his receivers running side to side. It's slant. It's a crossing route screen, crossing route screen, crossing route screen. That's the entire Kansas City offense, and it works. It works. So I don't understand why more people don't emulate that. Every team in the league should be running the same offense that Kansas City does, because evidently you can't stop it, no matter how old Travis Kelce is or how unrecognizable the receiving core is. That strategy of just going side to side up the field seems to work. But I give most of that credit to Andy Reid. And as much as people are tempted to be sucked into this Brady versus Mahomes conversation, Kyan, I believe that the more accurate debate that ought to be had based on the Chiefs' historic run here is whether or not Andy Reid is the greatest coach in this generation of football. Has he surpassed Bill Belichick as the greatest coach of this era?
His name is Bill Belichick.
I mean, because to me, people want to sit here and compare Brady and Mahomes, and I think Mahomes has a long way to go to catch Tom Brady for a variety of reasons that I don't have time to get into on this show, but I have in the past.
He has a long way to go to even get close to catching up with him.
Say it again?
He has a long way to go to get even close to catching up with Tom Brady.
That's how I feel. But if you look at the entire body of work of Belichick as a head coach versus Andy Reid as a head coach, I think it's a much more comparable comparison. It's a better debate to be had. Let's put it that way. It's a much better debate between the coaches versus the quarterbacks. What's up?
So, quarterbacks are good. I know that. Well, most of them.
Some of them.
James Winston ain't. Russell Wilson ain't that good either. But other than those two chickens, I'd probably say So other quarterbacks like Jalen Hurts, sometimes Lamar Jackson, let's see, Joe Burrow, all those guys, their coach gets the credit if they win some kind of Super Bowl. If they win something big, their coach gets the credit instead of the quarterback getting the credit. Like, everyone talks about the coach instead of how good the quarterback was. But it's so different from Mahomes because when the Chiefs and Mahomes win something big, they give all the credit to Mahomes and not Andy Reid. What's up with that?
That's a valid point. I think that I don't know that you see it so much with like Lamar. I think Lamar gets a lot of credit, but I think if you look at I think if you look at somebody like Matthew Stafford, right? Sean McVay gets a ton of credit with the Rams, as he should. I mean, I'm not knocking Sean McVay, but you saw Matthew Stafford get some credit for that Super Bowl victory, and you saw Sean McVay get elevated to a different status that even I don't think Stafford is at from a quarterback standpoint. So I think there's something to what you're saying, and I certainly believe that what you're saying is absolutely accurate as it pertains to the New England Patriots the last 20 years. Don't get me wrong, a lot of people gave Tom Brady credit, don't get me wrong, but Belichick got a ton of credit for the offensive success of the Patriots. Everybody's saying that Brady was a system quarterback and all that stuff, and Belichick got the credit for that. He did a wonderful job with the defense, to your point, but statistics will show that he didn't do, over the 20 years, he didn't do as good of a job with the defense as Brady did with the offense, and Brady was winning with different offensive coordinators the whole time, but they want to credit the system for Tom's success, but not for Patrick Mahomes' success. I would argue that Mahomes is the greatest system quarterback we've ever seen. I mean, I think he's a system quarterback. That's just what it is. But coaching matters. To your earlier point, you mentioned before we got on the air, talking about James Cook. James Cook is great. He had a great game, but he didn't get the ball enough at the end of the game, which I think was another mistake by Joe Brady in the AFC title game. So I think that, you know, coaching matters a lot. I don't love the hypocrisy with how they cover Mahomes versus these other quarterbacks. I've made that known on many occasions. Within the last couple of years, I've heard people compare Patrick Mahomes to Michael Jordan. I don't see that. And this week, I've heard him compare. We've also heard the Tom Brady, Peyton Manning comparison for a long time. I've heard people compare as it pertains to Josh Allen and Mahomes. I've heard people compare them as Manning and Brady and Barkley and Jordan. We've heard those comparisons. And even recently, I heard someone compare the trade of the pick that went to the Chiefs to select Mahomes, which came from Buffalo, to that of the Red Sox selling Babe Ruth to the Yankees. So now we're aligning Mahomes with Jordan and Babe Ruth and Tom Brady. And Michael I don't think he's on that level yet, Kyan. I don't. I think he's a great player, but I don't think when you're throwing 5 yards down the field and watching guys run for 20 yards that are wide open, like, I don't think you get to that.
A lot of those guys are also retired, and Patrick Mahomes is like, what, 26, 27?
I think he's 29, but to your point, though, there is some recency bias there. That's a great point. And so I think the more appropriate comparison is Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett. When you look at Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, it's a Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett thing. I've always felt that if you swap teams between Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett, I don't know that Kevin Garnett has 5 championships, but I know he's got more championships than Tim Duncan does toiling away in Minnesota, like KG did for so many years. Similarly, I think if you put Josh Allen in this Andy Reid system of guys running wide open 5 yards down the field from side to side, pick plays, corn dog and all this stuff, and guys are just running free 6 yards down the field, and then they run for another 12 yards and they inch their way down the field. They've been doing that for 3 straight years ever since Tyreek Hill left. And it's propped up Mahomes to this elevated status. If you allow Josh Allen that same offense, yes, I think maybe they would not have gone to 5 Super Bowls and won 3 or 4 of them, but I think they would have more than one title. And I think that Patrick Mahomes, had he been in Buffalo this whole time, would have 0 titles. I feel very confident in saying that. One last thing about the Chiefs in the AFC title game, Kyan. Do you think it's rigged? Do you think the referees are rigging it for the Chiefs? Say what?
I definitely do think they're pretty much, yeah, I'd probably say they're rigging it because one time when the Bills were on offense, they caught, I think it was a face mask. I don't remember, but they caught a flag. But then when the Chiefs were on offense, I think they face masked one of the Bills defensive players, and they didn't call it a flag.
So I don't know that rigged is the right. I think people get really wrapped up in it's rigged, and
I think it is too.
You think it is rigged? I don't know if it's rigged or not, but what I do know that the Chiefs get a favorable whistle. I do know that. And what I wrote on the site last week was that, and matter of fact, I'll go back and cite it really quickly as it pertains to the officiating, because I think people kind of get carried away with this. But, you know, I think the Chiefs fans look at it and they like to say, well, if look at this call that didn't go our way. If this one call had gone our way, people would be losing their minds about the, you know, people like to do that. Here's what I wrote. All kidding aside, the Chiefs' referee discourse has gotten out of hand, but two things can be true. The Chiefs make more necessary plays in the biggest moments than their opponents, and it really seems like the vast majority of the important 50-50 calls goes Kansas City's way. What too few fans consider is that the Chiefs' referee, quote-unquote, conspiracy goes beyond the judgment calls of defensive pass interference and holding and unnecessary roughness and roughing the passer. It's stuff that goes uncalled. Like when the Chiefs' tackles line up in the backfield, which is something that they tried to crack down on this year, but Kansas City has gotten away with it. Or the early jump that their tackles get without getting flagged for it. Stuff like that. It's little things and it's the big things, but it's stuff that goes uncalled as well that seems to go the Chiefs' way. There was somebody, there's a video on the internet you can find right now of the clock running down before the 2-minute warning at halftime. And the play clock ran out one second prior to the game clock. So the game clock was hit the 2-minute warning. It was at 2:01 actually when the play clock ran out, and they didn't call a delay a game. Stuff like that. It's like, why does that stuff go uncalled for the Chiefs? And then it's the 50-50 calls. All those calls where there's a montage on Twitter right now you can find of the bad spots that the Bills got consistently in the AFC title game. This stuff should not be completely ignored. So the Chiefs fans that are out there, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, just look at this stuff. Like, it's pretty damning over time when you look at all of these calls and all these different games, how this is kind of all seems to fall in their favor. And it's 50-50 calls. They're borderline calls. That Xavier Worthy catch, that was not a catch. The ball hit the ground, and he didn't have control over it when it hit the ground. Yeah, the ball, exactly. The ball didn't move, but he did not have possession because he only had one hand on top of the ball. So I don't know how you could sit there and say he had possession over it when the defender had hands on it too.
If his hand was under the ball, yeah, he had possession of the ball.
That's how I would look at it, but his hand wasn't under the ball. So, you know, again, I'm not saying that it's rigged. I'm not saying the Chiefs don't deserve to be here because they do. But it really looks suspicious. And it feels like to me, here's the thing. If this is really rigged, Kai, if this is really a rigged Super Bowl that we're entering, I think it makes the most sense for the league to rig it so that the Eagles win. Because what would be a better story than to have the Eagles fly, Eagles fly, to get let them win the Super Bowl, and then hope that the Chiefs and Eagles meet again in the Super Bowl next year for the rubber match of a 3 out of 4 year Super Bowl matchup. That's the most compelling storyline to me, is that if you set this thing up for the Eagles to win, and all the Swifties and stuff, they're already in the Super Bowl. The Taylor Swift fans, they're already going to be watching. You let Taylor Swift do halftime at next year's Super Bowl, right? And it'll be Chiefs-Eagles trilogy. rig it for the Eagles to win. That's the smart play if you're, in fact, one of these conspiracy folks. All right. So Super Bowl 59, Chiefs, Eagles. I want to go real quick over the things that I've got right. Oh, we have time for predictions, Kyan. Kyan's saying, can I get my predictions off? You'll get your predictions off. Don't worry. I got plenty of time for that. And I'm going to talk about my predictions up to this point that are on the website that I've made. The Chiefs are -1.5-point favorites. I just want to put that out there before I forget. But in the playoffs right now, your father is 8-4 at picking games. And he's 9-3 against the spread, which is pretty impressive. And we go into this Super Bowl weekend next week. 37-25 wild card record in the history of this website. 38-14 in the divisional round. 14-12 in conference championship games. 7-5 in the Super Bowl for an outstanding 96-56. That's a 632 all-time win percentage on picking playoff games in the history of this website and podcast. What I've gotten right so far this year, a couple things that I want to point out. I said early on before the wild card weekend that it'd be a top two seed winning the Super Bowl because I didn't feel like anybody outside of the top two seeds in either conference could win this thing. And we have a one seed versus the two seed in the Super Bowl. I said that. What's up?
So what I think about Super Bowl 59, I think that the Eagles have a chance of winning Super Bowl 59. Now, I'm not guaranteeing that they're winning. It's going to be a close score, but not like a huge difference. So I'd probably say that the Eagles, I'd probably say 31-28 Eagles win because a lot of the players are healthy and they're like really good. A.J. Brown, Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley, they've all had a good season. And Philly has been good for how many years?
They've been good for several years.
Yeah, like, so at least 6, 7?
I told you this is their third Super Bowl in 7 years.
Okay, so they've been good for quite a while. But 2 years ago in Super Bowl 57, the Eagles to the Chiefs. Was it 35 or 37?
I think it was 38-35, something like that. Yeah. I'll pull up the score, but continue.
So, yeah. 38-35 Chiefs, and they ended up winning the Super Bowl. And then after that, they won the Super Bowl 58, which was probably one of the most popular Super Bowls.
They beat the 49ers in overtime.
Yeah, they did. They beat the 49ers in overtime, which I looked on Google once, and I searched out what's the most popular Super Bowl, and it says Super Bowl 58, which is Chiefs versus Niners. So, and then they had a streak of 2 Super Bowl wins in a row, back-to-back. And then now, they have a chance. Both Philly and Kansas City both have a chance of winning this game. But like I said before, it's not going to be a huge difference because they're both good teams.
But you like the Eagles 31-28, right?
Yeah, I want the Eagles to win.
And what's the main reason why you think it's going to be 31-28 Eagles?
Because like I said before, the Eagles are like, they've been really, really, they've been not really, really, but they've been good over the last several years.
Well, what have the Chiefs been? The Chiefs won the championship the last 2 years.
I know. Which the Chiefs are also really good. Travis Kelce. I'm going to name some of the good players that I know.
Well, who do you think is going to make a difference in the game specifically for the Chiefs or the Eagles?
I'll probably say Saquon Barkley.
And who for the Chiefs do you think is an X factor?
If I have to be completely honest, I'd probably say Travis Kelce.
Okay. Well, Kelce turned it on in the Super Bowl last year, and he had a slow first half.
Yeah!
And then he turned it on. The pride of Cleveland Heights, Ohio. Shout out Cleveland Heights. Kelce turned it on late in the Super Bowl last year. So people think he may be too old. He's like 35 now. I don't know if he's got the wheels left to turn it on, but I think he can. And, you know, I think that the Chiefs are poised to make another run at this thing. Here's the deal. I believe that You know, you interrupted me when I was bragging about myself and how awesome I've been, you know, with these picks, but that's okay. Like Ohio State beating Notre Dame. I had that on the website too, but you realize you interrupted me saying that, right?
No.
I'm joking with you, dude. It's fine. It's fine. Here's what?
Give me the mic. okay. So, yeah, about Super Bowl 59. I feel like the Eagles will win and... the Chiefs will play good. I predicted probably going to be 31-28 Eagles. But if the Eagles do end up losing, I would be kind of sad because that would also mean that Mahomes and the Chiefs won 3 Super Bowls in a row, which is crazy. I don't think even Tom Brady did that.
No, he didn't, actually. He did not do that. He's won 3 in 4 years twice, I think, but maybe I think he did that twice, but he never won 3 in a row. No team has won 3 Super Bowls in a row. I believe the Packers won like an NFL championship and 2 Super Bowls in 3 straight years, but nobody's ever won 3 straight Super Bowls. This would be the first time. Why would it make you
NFL history?
Why would it make you sad if the Chiefs did that?
Because I am kind of tired of the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. Now, I'm not trying to be rude, but, like, the Chiefs have won, like, the Super Bowl, like, 2 times in a row, and...
You're just ready for somebody else to win it?
Yeah, because I'm tired of the Chiefs winning it, because every time the Super Bowl is coming up, the Chiefs are part of the Super Bowl. Like, can some other team be in the Super Bowl besides the Chiefs? Because I am really tired of the Chiefs being in the Super Bowl. Because, yeah, like, it's just annoying in some cases. Because they just keep winning back to back to back to back. Like, it's, like, really, 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 really annoying. And I feel like the Eagles pretty much got to win the Super Bowl.
Well, it's not the Chiefs' job to make it easy on the rest of the league to win these games.
I never said it was.
I know you didn't, but I'm just saying that these other teams have a responsibility in this. They need to do a little bit more to help themselves win, which brings me to what I think the keys for this game are for Philly, okay? The Chiefs have won, as I mentioned, 17 straight one-score games. That's an NFL record, which basically means you're not going to beat them in a close game. If you add in the fact that they're so good in late-game execution, Kansas City is, they're so good in situational football, and they may have the refs, maybe not in the bag, but at least the refs are not afraid to give them a 50-50 call, let's put it that way. When you add all those things up, that means that you can't beat them close. Their kicker doesn't miss kicks. Like, all these things mean you cannot beat them in a close game. You have to beat them by 2 scores or more. So the Eagles' best bet is they're going to have to kind of blow Kansas City away, just like Tom Brady did in the Super Bowl 3 years ago with the Bucks. You cannot allow this game to be close late if you're Philadelphia. At all. Because we know what the Chiefs will do late in games. I think the key for Philadelphia is they're going to have to win on the margins. And that's where they didn't win last year. You have to be buttoned up to beat the Chiefs in a big game. We saw it in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Jalen Hurts outplayed Patrick Mahomes. He did. But Jalen Hurts also dropped the ball inexplicably on the ground, and Nick Bolton picked it up and ran it back for a touchdown. You take away that one play, and it's a different game. But the truth of the matter is that play happened, and that's the kind of thing that cannot happen against the Chiefs. Kadarius Toney, for as much as he's kind of a punchline these days, he had the longest punt return in NFL history for the Chiefs in that game, which never gets brought up as a reason to knock Mahomes, even though Brady was knocked for having Adam Vinatieri kick field goals, but that's neither here nor there. And then Harrison Butker kicked the game-winning field goal for Kansas City, which also doesn't get brought up. But the point is that Harrison Butker is making big kicks. You're getting punt returns that are the longest in Super Bowl history. You had critical penalties going against Philadelphia late in the game. These are the things that cannot happen if you're going to beat the Chiefs. One other thing that needs to happen for Philly, you have to give them different looks, I believe, in the first half and the second half. What's up?
If, So let's say it's about to be halftime, like 10 seconds up. It's about to be halftime. The Chiefs are up 14 to 10. If the Chiefs at least get up to, I'd probably say at least 14 to 17 points, I'd probably say the Chiefs would win because, but then if the Eagles were ahead up in halftime, because once it gets to the fourth quarter, all the teams start locking in and, like, there's no more games. Like, they, like, try as hard as they can. But in the first quarter, they just play normal. So, yeah.
Like, so you're saying that the Eagles need to get up early on Kansas City? Is that what you're saying?
To probably have a chance, yeah.
Well, what if I told you that the Chiefs had a 10-point halftime deficit 2 years ago and they came back to beat the Eagles?
Well, in that case, I'd probably say I still think the Eagles would probably win the Super Bowl.
Well, I'm just saying, like, don't get me wrong. It helps that you get up by 10 points at halftime. Like, that's a good thing. But I am saying that Kansas City's known to make comebacks, and they came back on the Eagles 2 years ago.
They did come back on the Eagles 2 years ago, and it was a close game against the Chiefs and Niners. I was actually, funny thing, I was in the basement while my dad was watching the Super Bowl. I was just in bed playing Roblox. I don't know why I was doing that, but I just was. So, and then I went up to him since I didn't see him downstairs anymore. So I went upstairs and told him who won the Super Bowl, and he said the Chiefs won. And you never said the Chiefs won in overtime, but you did say the Chiefs won, and I was not happy about that.
I don't know that America was very happy about that, but yeah, that, which is why the Eagles need to have a different game plan for the second half and the first half. Much like when teams were trying to beat the Patriots back in the day, or when the Patriots were trying to beat the Colts back in the day with Peyton Manning, you can't give them the same look the entire game, Kai. You have to have one thing that you're looking to do in the first half. Maybe you have your first 15 plays scripted, and then you have some goals that you want to do for the first half. You want to give them a certain look, and then you want to give them a completely different look in the second half. You cannot give Kansas City the same look the first half and the second half, because we know that Kansas City finishes better than they start. You can anticipate the Eagles may get out to a fast start on the Chiefs, but you can also anticipate that in that scenario, the Chiefs are probably going to make a push to come back. What the Eagles cannot do is think that whatever worked in the first half is going to work in the second half. So obviously you're going to run Saquon Barkley no matter what, but you can't just think, like, if you say, for example, okay, we're going to try to work Dallas Goedert and work the middle of the field with the tight end, and we're going to catch the Chiefs napping in the first half, and then think that and if that works, you think you're going to do that in the second half? No. Spags is going to shut that down. The Chiefs are going to shut that down, and you're going to have to come up with something different for each half. You cannot script both halves the same, because Kansas City does not approach it that way. They're so good at making halftime adjustments, and we know Steve Spagnuolo is going to have these blitzes ready for late in the game in these high leverage spots, Kai. They have to be prepared for that. Buffalo wasn't. They sent blitzes at Buffalo. They weren't ready. CJ Stroud and the Texans were not ready. So Jalen Hurts, even you saw it in the fourth quarter in the game 2 years ago, Spags was sending some blitzers and Jalen Hurts couldn't pick them up. You know that they're going to be holding on to their best blitz packages for the fourth quarter in a tight game. So you have to be ready for that. Have your beaters ready. Have your quick releases, your running back out of the backfield, Gainwell or Barkley or somebody, be ready to catch the ball. Have your tight end release. Run a screen pass. Take advantage of their over-aggressiveness in those spots, because you know the Chiefs are going to do that. This is where I feel like Philly can win. Don't make any mistakes in special teams. Don't commit silly penalties. Be ready for Spags and his blitzes in the fourth quarter, and just be ready to play some situational football, because you know the Chiefs are going to be better than the second half. But you just got to give them a different look, right?
Yeah.
The tush push will be interesting, because we saw how successful Kansas City was at stopping it last week, and
the
we know
tushy pushy.
The tushy pushy, and we know what the Eagles will do with the tushy pushy, right? We know what they do with that. No team does it better. I would not lean on it too much, because, again, if the Chiefs get a stop like they did against the Bills, it's going to give them I think a confidence boost that they can shut that down, and that's their patented play in Philadelphia. So your prediction was Eagles 31, Chiefs 28. I believe that the Eagles are the better team. I believe that the Eagles should win this game. I also believe that the 49ers are better last year, and they didn't win. I also believe that the Ravens were better last year, and they didn't win. I also believe that the Bills were better than the Chiefs this year. I thought that they probably should have won last week, and they didn't. And so the Eagles, the fact that they're better doesn't mean they're going to win. The Chiefs, as I said on the site before, have earned the benefit of the doubt to be the team that you pick to win, even if they don't appear to be better on paper. They've earned it. So I'm going to go Kansas City 27, Philadelphia 24 in a final score that I hope does not come to fruition.
And another thing that I have to say, all the games that the Chiefs played against, like the Bills, all the other teams, the Eagles, the Chiefs didn't make a blowout against them. So that's why I think all those other teams could definitely beat the Chiefs, especially the Eagles. Because every game the Chiefs faced against, mostly the Bills and Eagles and the 49ers, it was not a blowout of a game from the Chiefs. It was a close game against the last three Super Bowls.
That's a very astute point. And you're right about that. The games have been close. And I feel like those teams should have won those games. But in those high leverage spots where situational football is critical, you don't see those teams coming through against the Chiefs. And you see the Chiefs coming through constantly. They come through on offense, defense, and special teams in all three phases. So I have to give the Chiefs the advantage. So Kyan's got the Eagles. His dad's got the Chiefs. His dad doesn't want the Chiefs. I definitely want the Eagles. But we shall see how the Super Bowl plays out.
We shall see.
Yeah. Last thing for the evening. I want to jump to the NFL draft really quickly because our Cleveland Browns. Yeah. Our Cleveland Browns. He's whispering to me, I want to talk about the draft.
Hey.
Of course you're going to talk about the draft. That's why I brought you on here. Our Cleveland Browns have the second pick in the draft. And I have a whole diatribe about why the Browns season went down the tubes, but I'm going to have to save that for another show or for another article. But, Kyan, what would you like to see the Browns do with the second pick of the draft? Knowing that they need a quarterback, but also knowing that guys like Travis Hunter are out there, Abdul Carter, you know, the Browns need help on the offensive line. The Browns could trade back.
How many rounds are in the draft?
There's 7 rounds in the draft. But the Browns have the second pick of the entire thing. So if you were running the Browns, Kai, and not the Mark draft, it's the Kai draft, what would you do with that pick?
Go for a really good player at any position that's not a position that's already pretty good that we don't need to fill up.
Interesting. Okay, that's really interesting. So you think you should not go for the best player available. You want to find the best player available at a specific position where you have a need. Is that right?
Yeah, because if the Browns like don't do that, I mean, yeah, they'll be better, but they won't be like the best of all.
So that to me, that says you would rule out Abdul Carter, which is the defensive end from Penn State. You'd rule him out because people think he's really good. Some people think he might be the best player in the draft, but we already have Myles Garrett. Granted, there's two defensive ends on the team, but we're pretty decent at D-line, and we had a good year in terms of getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. So you would not go Abdul Carter. You'd go a different position. Is that right?
Yeah.
So would you go Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, who's a quarterback out of Miami? Would you go Travis Hunter? What would you do?
I'd probably get two good players on Colorado, Shedeur Sanders or Travis Hunter. Maybe in both. Because Shedeur Sanders has a chance of winning Rookie of the Year. Has a chance. And if we get Travis Hunter, he also has a chance of winning Rookie of the Year. He doesn't have to be a quarterback. But if we got Travis Hunter alongside Denzel Ward and Jerry Jeudy, with Elijah Moore being our backup, we'd be better and all, but like we wouldn't be best. If I had to choose a record that the Browns have with Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter on the team, my prediction would probably be 11-6.
You might be right about that. Unfortunately, son, they're probably not going to be able to get both. It would be very unlikely that they'll get Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders. So, well, let me ask you this. If you could only get one, who would you want? Got to narrow you down.
I'll take Shedeur Sanders.
Okay, so Shedeur Sanders would be the pick for Kyan. I'll reserve my thoughts for the mock draft, but what I will say is I've come to an epiphany, y'all. I don't believe that if you... Now, granted, the Browns pick second, but I don't believe that if you have the number one pick in the draft, you should ever take a quarterback at the top spot. I just feel like there are far too many reasons why it's not good to draft a quarterback number one overall.
Yeah, but if you... Yeah, but like, what if the Browns draft Shedeur Sanders and like in 2028, he's like a 99 overall X Factor quarterback? Like, then what?
Well, then you would want to make sure that you had that quarterback on your team. So the Browns will be kicking themselves if they pass on Shedeur Sanders this year, and then 3 years from now he's a 99 on Madden. Yeah, they'd be kicking themselves. But I don't think that you should pick a quarterback with the number one pick. I'm talking specifically the number one pick, like Caleb Williams did in Chicago in our backyard here. I think that was... I'm not going to call it a mistake, but I just think that it's a dicey proposition to take a quarterback that high. For one, we know that half the quarterbacks fail anyways. So the success rate is really low. And if you look at recent history, guys like Caleb Williams, Bryce Young, who came on late in the year, Trevor Lawrence, who faded late in the year, Baker Mayfield even, and Jared Goff, at their first stops anyway, you know, these guys did not... Matthew Stafford was the number one pick, but again, to your point, Kai... In his first stop, Matthew Stafford was not... He did not take the Lions to the Super Bowl or anything like that. Goff went to the Super Bowl and lost. Caleb, Bryce, Trevor, Baker, none of these guys had a ton of success with the teams that drafted him number one overall. Most quarterbacks that are good did not go number one overall. Joe Burrow is one exception recently. But if you look at Allen and Mahomes and Lamar and Rodgers, even Tom Brady... What those guys all have in common is not only were they not the number one pick of the draft, but they all sat and watched. They all sat and watched. And you have the ability to do that when you don't have the pressure to play. If you don't take a quarterback number one, there's not a ton of pressure on that kid to play right away. But the reality is there's a myth in football of giving guys the time to develop that they need. So reason number one is the success rate is low for quarterbacks in general, especially those going number one. And reason number two is you don't have time to let them develop. Because who has the patience for that? If you have the number one pick in the draft, the fans don't have the patience. The ownership typically doesn't have the patience. The media doesn't have the patience. They all want to see that guy play right away because he was the number one pick. And if the coach and GM is lucky enough to pick them, and if they're lucky enough not to get fired, then they can't even afford to have patience. They're in self-preservation mode at this point, right? They don't have the ability to let that guy develop. I mean, they probably had a stinky year last year in the first place, which is how they ended up picking first in the draft. So they're sticking around, and they know that if this kid doesn't pan out, then they're going to get canned. So they're going to pick their guy, and then they're going to throw them in there right away when things aren't going well because they can't afford to take too many more losses and keep their job. So that's reason number two. Reason number three is chances are you're going to get that quarterback killed. Usually, teams picking at the top of the draft stink. And usually, teams that stink have bad offensive lines. And if you send a kid out there and behind a bad offensive line, you're going to get him killed and you're going to get either him injured or you're going to wreck his confidence. We saw RG3, we saw Andrew Luck, going back even further, we saw David Carr, and we saw Tim Couch. That's all within the last 25 years. But we've seen these guys come in, have no protection in front of them, and they're basically running for their life from the beginning. Granted, RG3 wasn't the number one pick, but the point is you put these guys in positions where they're going to be facing constant pressure year after year after year because you don't have the offensive line figured out, and it's going to be a problem. RG3 got hurt. Andrew Luck got knocked around so much he retired early. Tim Couch and David Carr had talent, but their confidence got wrecked, and they were never the same. They couldn't be put back together again like Humpty Dumpty. So you combine little patience with big expectations with a lack of talent around the quarterback, and it doesn't make any sense to draft the quarterback into that spot because he's only going to end up failing. This is basically goes back to the whole idea of where you get drafted to matters far more than anything else. And to the point about the lack of talent around the quarterback, reason number four is quarterback is the most dependent position that there is. The main thing you're looking to accomplish at the top of the draft, y'all, is you want to reduce the risk of your pick. The higher you go in the draft, the higher you're making your first selection, you want to reduce risk. And is to the extent that you can mitigate that, you're going to have the most success. Quarterbacks, Kyan, are high risk and hit only half of the time anyways, as I mentioned earlier. And that's in, like, all things considered in a vacuum. Quarterbacks hit at like a 50% rate. Even in the first round, they hit at about a 50% rate. But if you're drafting at the top of the draft, picking a quarterback, this is a guy who has to depend on the offensive line. He has to depend on his running back and his run game. He has to depend upon his receivers. He has to depend upon the defense and, of course, the coaching staff. If you have an offensive coordinator or a head coach who doesn't know what to do with the quarterback or can't figure it out, then that quarterback's going to struggle. So you're talking about taking a player who only works out half the time anyways, putting him in with the most expectations, putting him, chances are, behind a bad offensive line with no patience to allow him to grow or develop from the fans or the media or the team itself. And he's dependent on everybody else around him, and everybody else around him is not good, which is why you're picking at the top of the draft in the first place. It makes way more sense, really, to take a lineman at the top of the draft. And I know that's not sexy. It's not going to get the fan base riled up. And what you're missing out on is the potential for a Jaden Daniels situation where you have a young quarterback who just completely comes in and changes the culture or is a big part of a big change agent for the franchise and the entire operation. And you're just losing out on that possibility that that kid may have that magic at the top of the draft as some quarterbacks do. But even then, I mean, we've seen guys like Troy Aikman come in and stink his first year and get killed, and eventually he won a Super Bowl. We saw Peyton Manning come in and stink his first year and get killed, and eventually he won a Super Bowl, and he was great. But it's just such a dependent position, whereas tackles, like if you take a left tackle at the top of the draft, Kyan, it's basically like you just block the dude in front of you. And that's reductionist, I get it. Like I'm oversimplifying, but that's basically what it is. You just block the guy in front of you. If you're drafting a pass rusher at the top of the draft, let's go get the quarterback. Let's basically hit that guy with the ball. That's basically what your job is. It's not much more complicated than that. The quarterback position is so complex and complicated. You're looking at them to be a leader and to be a fully grown and developed adult ready to lead men at 22, 23 years of age. It is a lot, and it depends on so many other individuals for that guy to be successful. Whereas positions like tackle or defensive end do not require as much of a dependency on other people around them for their success. And the fifth reason, and I've already touched upon it, it's just unimaginable expectations. And that's just the biggest thing, is that you draft the quarterback number one, you're expecting that guy to turn around the entire franchise and be a savior. He's probably working with a lame duck coach anyways, or a rookie coach that has never done it before. Those are usually the two circumstances that a number one QB is walking into. And then you throw them into social media and the access to players and all this other stuff. And it's just a cocktail for disaster taking a quarterback number one. So I believe in all my years of watching football, I had a milestone birthday recently, y'all. I've been watching football for a very long time. I'm not young, okay? In all my years of watching football and all the analysis that I've done, I've come to the conclusion drafting a quarterback number one more often than not is not the right decision. It just doesn't make sense for a team. The best teams have all done something similar to what the Atlanta Falcons did, believe it or not. And I know they got crushed for it at the time, and some people would still argue that they overpaid Kirk Cousins coming off that Achilles injury, but they went out and got their bridge veteran quarterback. They drafted a quarterback, not number one, but they drafted Michael Penix, number eight. So now Penix has a chance to sit for a while. He gets a chance to learn from a consummate pro in Kirk Cousins. He gets the chance to not have the weight of the world on his shoulders because he's not the number one pick savior guy. He's not expected to turn the franchise around overnight. He can sit and marinate, learn the role, learn the position, learn how to lead, learn the playbook, the offense, whatever. He's not coming into, you know, he's coming into Atlanta, which is not the worst team in the league. They already had Bijan Robinson in place. There's already other things in place there that can help them succeed. And you saw at the end of the year, Penix showed some signs. Now watch next year, Michael Penix take off. Don't be shocked if he takes off and has a good sophomore season. And this is what I'm talking about. Even CJ Stroud didn't have the expectations that Bryce Young had coming into the draft. Bryce Young goes number one. He's now got the weight of the world on his tiny shoulders, whereas C.J. Stroud kind of inconspicuously goes number two, and then he's allowed to be awesome, and that's just the way it works. But if you're number one, you're dealing with the expectations. You're dealing with the dependency. You're dealing with the bad offensive line. You're dealing with the myth of being given time to develop because you never really are, and odds are you weren't going to work out in the first place anyways. And the hint of adversity that comes to hit that quarterback, Kai, I mean, once that is unlocked, then the floodgates open up and everybody just expects that person to fail. So having said all that, you know, the Browns are in a little bit of a different situation because maybe they can take a guy at number two and maybe Shedeur Sanders is that guy. We'll just have to wait and see. We're going to talk much more about that on the mock draft coming up. I'm probably going to write an article about the Browns specifically as to what went wrong for their season this year and how they can get back on track. So that'll put a bow on it for Hip Hop Sports Report, the King Kyan edition. King Kyan, you were an awesome guest in this, your first podcast. Thank you for joining your dad and making me proud, man. Would you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share tonight?
Let's go, Eagles.
Let's go, Eagles. You heard it there from Kyan. Thank y'all for listening. Again, you know where to find the podcast. Please go ahead and check us out. Share it. Tell somebody about it. Tell somebody about my son, man. He's over here making me proud as a future podcaster himself. So thank you, Kyan. Thank y'all for listening. This is Jay Hicks signing off. Super Bowl 59. We'll check it out. Y'all let us know what you think. We'll talk to y'all soon. We out of here. Give me a peace, Kai.
Pass.
Give me a real peace.
Peace.
Say peace. Peace. All right, y'all. We out of here. Peace.